It's Your Money with the Investor Coach, Paul Nichols, the show that pulls back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposes the truth about the traditional financial planning model. Paul believes education plus understanding leads to clarity and confidence that can and will lead to peace of mind. He uses simple solutions grounded in academic research from leading financial minds at Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and the University of Chicago, including several Nobel laureates. You do not need to know everything if you have an investor coach teaching you the few right things. Paul Nichols is the president of Financial Abundance, a registered investment advisor. He is a member of the National Ethics Bureau, the Better Business Bureau, and member of Strategic Coach Quarterly. Get ready for some common sense clarity coaching with the investor coach, Paul Nichols.
Good morning, one and all. You are listening to It's Your Money. This is Paul Nichols, your host. And you know what? It's a little after nine, and some of you that may not be aware of some changes that have happened here on Coach's Corner, you may normally expect to hear Tim Rogers at this point. Well, the lineup has changed and the times have changed. So for those of you that normally tune in to hear Top Gun Tim Rogers, well, Tim's no longer with Coach's Corners. He's moved on to greener pastures, and we want to thank Tim for his contribution to Coach's Corner as a whole. But he's moved on, and we have a new lineup. Actually, I will be coming on from 9 to 10. You're listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. If you haven't caught my part of Coach's Corner, we talk about finances and pulling back the curtain on issues that matter to you, because we believe education plus understanding leads to clarity and confidence that can result in peace of mind. And then following me would be Ken Pasch, the leadership coach with Unlocking Your Full Potential. And Ken, obviously, if you have heard Ken, you know he talks about employment issues, leadership issues, thinking outside the box, these types of things. And then following Ken is some new additions to the Coach's Corner lineup that would include Ryan Lowe, the real estate coach. Ryan Lowe is a local real estate guru here in Center County, if you will. For those of you in the Chambersburg market, you may have not have heard of Ryan, but he's very well known in this area, Center County, and Brian Adams with Capital Mortgage. So now, Brian Allen. I always want to say Brian Adams. Why do I say that? Hurts, cuts like a knife. Is that Brian's song? But anyway, Brian Allen with Capital Mortgage. And so now our lineup includes an investor coach, a real estate coach, a mortgage coach, and a leadership coach. Wow, all bundled up in Coach's Corner, Saturday Morning Street Smarts, where we all pull back the curtain on our respective industries and expose the truth about those industries. Now, I want to bring on my cohort, my soundboard, if you will, Luke the Soundboard Miller. Luke, you have not been around for a few weeks, a month or so, so some of the people may have forgot who you are.
Yeah, including myself. No, it's been a while. There's been some other guests and not enough microphones, so we let them take my place for a while, but it's good to be back.
Well, welcome, Luke. Luke normally joins me, for those of you that may be tuning in for the first time. We talk about finances, everything from estate planning to retirement planning to managing your money to long-term care, insurances, income for life, all kinds of different financial scenarios. We really specialize in managing assets and retirement. When I say we, that is me, Paul Nichols. I own Financial Abundance, which is a registered investment advisor. Registered with who, you might ask? Well, that would be with the Securities and Exchange Commission of Pennsylvania. And so we come to you every Saturday morning, which will be now our new time, from 9 to 10 o'clock. And Luke, I know that we want to share a couple facts and figures with the folks. What are we going to be talking about on the show this week?
This week, we're going to start off like we try to when it's a normal show, and we're going to have our market update. And that consists of more than just the S&P or the Dow Jones. We kind of break it down among all the indices we can come up with, and really give you a good perspective of how the market as a whole is doing.
So we are going to do our market update as we normally do, not every week, but every week we don't have an interview, we do that. And the reason for that is so that you can get a well-rounded view of what the market's doing. So we will get into the market update and an explanation thereof directly. After that segment, though, let's tell everybody else what we're going to do. We're going to be talking about qualified plans, right?
Yeah, the idea is it's an educational show. We, education leads to Clarity and confidence, which can result in lasting peace of mind, is one of the things you say all the time. So let's break it down. Let's show people the different types of accounts they can use. And before you know how to invest, I guess you need to know the tools that you're going to use to invest.
Well, not so much the tools, but the classification of accounts, which we're going to talk a little bit about. Qualified plans, Roth, traditionals, Roth conversion, required minimum distributions, income deductions, distribution versus accumulation. Some of those areas that are all in the area of qualified plans or retirement plans. And then after that, we are going to get into Social Security. That is, Social Security is still around at this point. Now, we don't know how long it's going to be around, and we're not going to,
speculate.
There's another word that I'm looking for, Punxsutawney Phil. What do they always call him? The
prognosticator.
Prognosticator. We're not going to prognosticate here today, but we are going to talk about, do you take your Social Security at 62 or do you take it at 65? We're going to talk about some of those things. So that should round out our show. Another event-filled, packed, action-packed, information-packed plethora. Yes, my friends, plethora of information in the financial arena that we are going to share with you. And of course, for anyone that misses any of this, where can they find this information, Luke?
Any of this can be found a variety of places. Easiest would probably be to start at our website, which is www.financialabundanceinc.com, financialabundanceinc.com. Or if you want to catch up on the radio shows, we are now officially on iTunes. You can subscribe to the podcast and have it automatically on your iPod every week.
Yeah, and you know, that's really easy, folks. For those of you that may not be up on the technology, I've had to force myself to get up on it, but you can actually go to iTunes. You can go to www.itunes, and there's all kinds of music and stuff on there, but you have to download it to your computer, iTunes. But once you're in there, you can go into the store and just search Financial Abundance. And when you search Financial Abundance, out pops our show, It's Your Money. And you can download those shows if you would like and take advantage of that.
And just want to make sure everyone knows that is free of charge. There's not a fee for our podcast service.
We don't charge for podcasts. So you can get the show at our website. You can get it on iTunes. You can call the office, and many of the shows that we have, the most popular shows, which is about a dozen or so, we actually have on CDs. A lot of people want to refer to them, whether it be our estate planning. In fact, we have Alan Ugulis' show on there. We have Barry Dykes, the author of The Pirates of Manhattan. We have Doug Andrews' stuff on there. So we have a lot of information on the show because we're all about education. We believe education coupled with understanding leads to clarity and confidence that can and will, my friends, result in peace of mind. So welcome to the show, bright and early, our new time slot, 9 to 10. Let's go ahead and get right into the market update, Luke, because we're going to run out of time. We got about 7 or 8 minutes here to do our market update. So let's go ahead and get into it. Let's start, though, by explaining to people why we do a market update. And the reason for that is that most of the time, what access, when people look at the market, what do they normally look at, Luke?
They're looking at either the S&P or the Dow Jones, maybe the NASDAQ, but those would probably be the three
index, plural.
Indices
would actually be plural. Indices would be plural if plural.
Oh, there you go.
Index, indices would be plural indexes.
There you go.
But what we're trying to say here, folks, is you can't just look at the Dow Jones, because it represents 30 large U.S. companies, or the S&P 500, which represents 500 large U.S. companies, and get a clear picture of where the market is. Now, you can, with those two indices, get a feel for how the U.S. large market is doing, but you certainly are not going to get any idea of how international is doing, how small companies are doing, large companies are doing, and so on. So the market update is important because we want to take each index and give you a market update on that index, because we believe in an academic approach to investing. We believe free markets work. They're efficient. The cost of goods and services are the going price. I always talk about bubble gum. If you go to a local convenience store in our area, the top shelf is bubble gum, and every pack of gum is $1.49. We believe the free market dictates the prices of goods and services, and any change in those prices would be a result of new news that's instantaneous, and that we all know that. So we believe that based on supply and demand, the free markets are the best determinant of market prices. We also believe in modern portfolio theory, and that is the concept that diversification works, and that dissimilar price movement can be structured to your advantage. For example, you want to own umbrella companies and suntan lotion companies, not just one or the other. You want to own large companies, small companies, value company, growth companies, international, cash, U.S. You want to have the whole spectrum. But unfortunately, when we look at the nightly news, they only give us
two or three at the most.
And it's all U.S.?
U.S. large.
Predominantly. And then we believe in the three-factor model, which explains where 96% of returns come from. And we could give you premium, what we call premium risk factors for investing in these certain areas. In other words, all the information that we utilize and apply to our way of managing assets is done at the academic level. We believe that the science of the last 50 years is more than ample to invest with, that you don't have to listen to any manager, that no one has a clue what's going to happen in the market. Even the famous ones you see on TV, they don't have a clue. They're guessing at best. In fact, some of you that have been listening to some of those have probably taken a bath in the last 6 months to a year. But that's a whole nother conversation. Luke, we're running out of time. We need to go ahead and hit all the market index. So let's we want to explain to people why we do this every week, or at least every week we try to, because you don't know how your portfolio is doing unless you understand where all the index are. And if you're not in all of these, my friends, you really don't understand what's going on and how to invest. And I'll tell you that most people are clueless about this. So without sounding judgmental, we're trying to help. Let's move on and educate folks, Luke, as to how their assets should be looking, or at least how they're doing in the market.
Let's do that. We're going to have to move.
Russell 2500 measures small to mid-cap U.S. companies.
As of Friday the 14th of August, month-to-date, it is up 2.5%. Year-to-date, it's up just a hair over 19%.
I hope you have small companies in your portfolio. It's up 19% this year. How about the Russell 2000, which measures small to micro companies, very small companies?
Month-to-date on
US,
that.
U.S., by the way.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Month-to-date on that one, you're about 1.35. And a year-to-date, just a little bit over 14% up.
Well, let's hope you own small U.S. and small micro companies, because you're up 19 and 14% respectively. How about the Russell 2000 value, which measures small companies that are value companies? A value company is a distressed company. A growth company is a non-distressed company. You should own both, because with value companies, you get a higher risk premium. So how are small value companies doing?
Let's see, month-to-date, a little over 3%. Year-to-date, 5.8%.
They're not smoking, but they are up. Let's hope you own small value companies. How about Russell 1000 large value companies? These would be large U.S. value companies.
Month-to-date, up 8.2%. And year to date, up just a hair over 9%.
Let's hope you own small U.S. value and growth and small U.S. or large U.S. value and growth, because all of them are up, value and growth. That leads us to the U.S. large companies, or the S&P 500.
This one, once again, as of Friday the 14th, month to date, it is up 1.68%. And year to date, up 11.16%.
Now, what we notice is we see a lot of people that have half their portfolio in U.S. large, as a general rule, right?
I mean,
we predominantly see that.
Pretty regular.
Okay. And it's up about 11% for the year, okay? But what about all these other asset classes that are up much more, like small to mid-cap growth and small micro growth? They're up 19 and 14. And how often do we see people have small companies in their portfolios?
Very rarely.
It's a sad state of affairs in this country, when not only most of the people out there are clueless, but a lot of the advisors are clueless as well. They're just chasing the market and doing what's traditionally taught in this industry, which, unfortunately, is wrong. Okay? I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but the proof's in the pudding. Let's go into the international market. We got to be very quick. Morgan Stanley Capital International World Index. These would be developed countries.
Month-to-date, up just under 2%. Year-to-date, up 19.35%.
How about the Morgan Stanley Capital International Emerging Markets Index?
Month-to-date, up 1.03%. And year-to-date, up 50.38%.
My friends, the market's chasing it. You should have been in it all along. 50% emerging markets. And the last one, the Morgan Stanley Capital Europe, Australia, Far East.
Month-to-date, 2.32% up. And year-to-date, 17.86% up.
Folks, we do this market update so that you understand you can't just be in one or two asset classes. You need to be in every one of them across the board, because we believe we're not trying to beat the market. We're trying to get market returns. You're listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach, joined by Luke Miller. It is Saturday morning. We hope this finds you well. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to It's Your Money. You're listening to Paul Nichols, the investor coach. I hope this finds you well this morning. And I'm joined by Luke Miller. Luke, the soundboard extraordinaire. Luke, you know, one of the reasons that Luke comes on when we don't have an interviewee is, and by the way, you're listening to WBLF 970 AM and WEEO 103.7 Talk FM. The reason that Luke comes on is because some of these subjects can be a little bit dicey. Is dicey the right word?
Heavy, I think,
heavy,
might be a good
complex,
word.
Complex, filled with misinformation, a lot of these subjects.
Or even just filled with a lot of information.
Yeah, I mean, overload, right?
Right. You can easily get overwhelmed with this.
Well, we're going to talk about qualified plans, ladies and gentlemen, but I thought I would preface this segment with some information that I just pulled out of the Kiplinger tax letter that I get circulated bi-weekly to business clients since 1925. But anyway, the back of this, one of the things, who pays taxes? And I want to ask you a question after I share this with you and get your thought process, because my friends, how you answer the question really dictates what kind of plan you should be pursuing in a general sense, okay? So, upper incomers continue to bear a record share of tax burden. Did you know that, Luke?
Well, yeah, because you read this to me before.
Oh, you are familiar with this. You are preve. Okay. The top 1% of filers paid 40.4% of all the federal income taxes. So the top 1% income earners paid 40% of the taxes.
Astonishing.
And that's up about 1% from the previous year. And this is for data of 2007, according to the IRS. The most recent year available would be 2007, yet those taxpayers made just 22.8% of the total reported adjusted gross income. So they made 22% of the adjusted gross income as a whole, but they paid 40% of the taxes. The minimum level of adjusted gross income needed to be in the top 1% is a pretty high number. What would you guess it to be?
Oh, geez, that's probably, what, $1 million?
No, it's $410,000.
Sheesh.
$410,000, if you made over, or you as a couple, made over $410,000, you're considered to be the mega wealthy in the top 1%.
That's a lot of money, but that's not what I would consider mega wealthy.
I don't know. I guess not. But according to, it must be a lot of people, not that many people make that, you know, 1% of the population. But 1% is a pretty big number.
Right. Right.
You know, we're talking about 35 million people or 40 million people, about the same as uninsured. No, that would be 10%. 1% would be about 4 million people.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to throw too many numbers at folks. But the highest 5% income earners paid 60% of the total income tax and made 37% of the adjusted gross income. They each had adjusted gross incomes of at least 160. So if you're in the top 5% income earners, you have 160,000 adjusted gross income on your tax returns. Now, the top 10% of filers, those who had adjusted gross incomes of 113,000 or higher. So when you think about it, if you and your wife or spouse collectively make over $113,000 adjusted gross income, you're in the top 10% income earners in this country. And did you realize, Luke, that the top 10% income earners, anyone who made over $113,000 collectively or singly, were in the top 10% and paid 71% of all the taxes paid in our country. Now, here's the interesting thing.
Wow.
The interesting thing, for those of you, I'll tell you, the reason I bring this up is I'm tired of pulling my load. I'm getting kind of tired here because the bottom 50% of all filers, the bottom 50%, what do you think they paid in total income tax? Of the total income tax bill, what do you think the bottom 50% income earners paid?
Well, heck, if the top 10 are paying 70-plus percent, they probably paid nothing.
2.9%. The bottom 50% of all filers paid just 2.9% of those that filed. Okay. Not everybody filed if their income wasn't high enough.
Right.
Okay. Their share is so low because Social Security taxes are not included in the figures and because many of them get substantial tax relief from earned income credit. Now, here's the I don't know if irony would be the right word here, but what's interesting is those 50% are the ones that get most of the programs. I do not qualify for one single program. No free lunch program for my kids. Nothing. No free medical. Nothing. In fact, our insurance premiums are close to $15,000 a year for me and my family with deductibles, co-pays. I mean, when you think about it, and we're not massive income earners, okay? What's interesting about this thing is that you hear about all these taxes, but 50% of the people out there, 50% of the American population are only paying 3% of the taxes but getting all of the entitlements. This is why folks are so fired up right now about the direction that the country's headed and all these town meetings and all that. And this is not a political show. It's a show that's based on finances. However, taxes are a substantial aspect of our finances anymore.
You better plan your taxes as well as you plan your finances, or else you're in for a rude awakening.
That's right. It's not, folks, what you accumulate when you get ready to retire. It's what you get after the distributions take place. What I mean by that? Maybe you can elaborate on that, Luke, what we're talking about.
I guess most people worry about the rate of return that they're getting, which is important. It's very important. But they forget about that second step, which is getting paid the money that you worked so hard to save. And if you haven't planned for taxes, then your distribution isn't going to match your rate of return, and you're going to get hurt by it.
So here's the question that we talked about earlier. Do you believe the taxes in the future are going to be lower, the same, or higher? So do you believe taxes are going to be lower in the future, the same, or higher? What do you think, Luke?
Well, I mean, obviously they're going to be higher. Our deficit as a country is going nowhere but up. It's got to be paid for one way or another.
People are living longer. We're going to have the largest workforce in history that's starting to retire. And in another few years, we're going to have the largest retirement base with the smallest workforce in American history supporting it. So the question, what type of plan should I fund? A Roth, a traditional IRA, 401k, 403b, 457, a qualified plan? Or should I put my money into a Roth or another type of plan that acts like a Roth? Well, what Luke and I have discovered, we do a lot of retirement planning in my firm, and what we've noticed is it is pretty rare to find somebody in the same or lower tax bracket after they retire. Why is that, Luke? Why do most people that come into our office, the vast majority, think that they're going to retire in a lower tax bracket, but find out to their dismay that they are, in fact, in the same or a higher tax bracket after retirement?
It's because they lost all their deductions. Chances are their house is paid off, the kids are moved out, so there goes that. They are at a point where they're actually making more money than they ever have in the past through pensions, through retirement plans, Social Security, all that stuff counts towards it. And when you combine those things, I mean, like you said, they're at the same or even a higher tax bracket than they were when they were working their entire lives.
So we can see that there's a huge, huge issue, a huge disconnect, a misconception of the way retirement planning is done in this country when we find that most people are putting money away under the guise that when they retire, they're going to be in a lower tax bracket because their financial advisor has sold them this bill of goods that they're going to be in a lower tax bracket, that they only need 80% of their money to live on, when in fact what we see is most people need 100% or more to live on.
Sure.
At a time in their life, they're taking more money and they have no deductions. Their house is paid off. Their kids are gone. They don't get any children deductions. They're not funding any more qualified plans, so they don't get any of those deductions. So really, you start looking at it and you say, well, wait a minute. Is funding a 401k or a traditional IRA really in our best interest? And I would say in most people's case, it's not. Now, 401k gets a little bit trickier because the company's willing to match. Let's say a company's willing to match 50 cents for every dollar that you put in. Well, the perception is that you're getting a 50% gain in that account because they're matching 50 cents to your every dollar. But my friends, it's not a 50% gain. It's a 50% net value that's higher that must be taxed. Now, it's true that if you took the money out right away, that the 50% match would probably cover the tax on the other part of the account. But, you know, when you start looking at it, if you are going to be in the same or higher tax bracket, how does deferring taxes help you?
I don't see it. There's only one way in ignorance, or if you've totally maxed out your Roth contributions.
Or you make more money.
Or you make too much money.
And you can't fund it.
And deferral is better than paying tax twice.
Or being taxed as earned.
Taxed as earned, but it's there's better ways of doing it.
You know, so folks, I'll tell you that the old adage of stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that mantra, chasing the market, maxing out your traditional IRA, paying off your house, college funding through UGMAs, all that stuff is... I don't want to say that it's wrong, but it may not be right for you, depending on your situation.
Now, you said something, and I'm very comfortable with it. I've heard it. I've studied it. I've reviewed everything you said. But one of the things you threw in there is out of left field for these people, and you said paying off your house might not make sense.
Well, you know, equity management. You know, Luke, most people, there are two where they accrue most of their money is in two areas, their home or their IRAs, 401ks. And they don't manage them well. In fact, most people don't manage their IRA or 401ks very well at all. In fact, they just turn it over to a registered rep or some broker that tells them what to do rather than them knowing really what they should do, which is the first mistake. They need to learn what they should do. But most people don't even think about managing the equity in their home. And if I went through several questions that related to a prudent investment and whether tying up equity and cash in your home is a prudent investment, it would not be a prudent investment at all. From a, you know, and this comes back, and we don't have time to get into it, but back in the 30s, when this whole mantra, the post-30s, where, you know, my grandparents said, pay off your house, pay off your house. Well, back in the 30s, they didn't have the loans and the stopgaps that they have today, and a bank could call the loan anytime they wanted to, and if you didn't have all the money to pay it off, they could take your house, and that's exactly what happened. Back in the 30s, and that's where this old school of thought came from. Oh, pay off your house, pay off your house, pay off your house. Folks, from a financial viewpoint, paying off your house makes no sense whatsoever. And I'll leave that alone because next week we are going to talk about that. We're going to talk about equity management next week. What's the bank's greatest asset? Does equity have a rate of return? What is the definition of a prudent investment? We'll talk about those next week. We don't have much time, but as it relates to qualified plans, should you fund a Roth? Should you fund an IRA, 401k, 403b? My friends, it depends a lot on what your situation at retirement. It's not about accumulation. It's about what you keep. But with our minute or so left, I want you to go ahead and promote that. Would you promote that, Luke?
Yeah, certainly. We have a CD available to you, the listeners, that Paul, you did along with Mark Mattson. And doesn't go over qualified plans as much as just exactly how to invest and the appropriate ways to invest.
It's about the market.
It's about the market. It's called 7 Deadly Investor Traps and 3 Power Strategies. I've listened to it. We've promoted it on the show in the past to huge requests. We got a new shipment in and wanted to offer it up once again. It's what, an hour long, if that. Super good information, entertaining to listen to. And anyone who just was kind of curious how markets work, this is the way to do it without a cost to you.
Well, Luke, they can go to the website and request that, or they can give us a call, 866-867-5745. You're listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. We'll be right back. Do you own stock in the company you work for? A lot of workers do these days, and in many cases, you can buy company stock at a discount, which is great. But if you're not careful, you could end up having too much of a good thing. Look at your total investments. If your employer's stock is more than 15% of your total assets, think about selling some of it. Consider this. Institutional money managers rarely invest more than 5% of their investment into any one stock. If the pros won't do it, why would you? You might like your company, but having a lot of your money in one security is aggressive, speculative, and could be dangerous. Let us help you make the right investment decisions for you and your family. Just call our office at Financial Abundance, 814-867-5745, or check out our website, www.financialabundanceinc.com. That's 814-867-5745. Listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. I'm joined by Luke the Soundboard Miller, who is here this morning, as he is usually, to help unravel some very intense subjects. And we just left the last segment talking about qualified plans and doing a plug for next week, really. Does equity have a rate of return, my friends? The answer will be on next week's show. What's the bank's greatest asset? Have you ever thought about that, Luke? What is the bank's greatest asset?
Well, that's a really good question.
Yeah, it is.
I bet we'll find out the answer to that next week.
Yes, you do not want to miss it. For those of you that are coachable and really want to learn the truth, we are going to pull the scales from your eyes next week.
And, be prepared.
Yeah, be prepared. So anyway, we are talking about our market update in our first segment. Then we went and talked a little bit about qualified plans and do you believe taxes are going to be higher, lower, or the same? And based on that belief, you might want to rethink how you're putting money away for retirement, especially all you in the 40s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. Those of you in your 60s, well, it might be a little bit late, but we can do a little bit of backtracking and help you out. Because, my friends, we believe taxes are going to be the biggest concern moving forward, and it has nothing to do with the current administration. It doesn't matter what administration's in there. Let's face it. All these politicians, their job is, their paramount purpose is to raise taxes for their constituents. Now, some of you say, well, that's not what politics is all about, my friends. That's what every promise, the result of every promise in politics has, is the promise of an increase in taxes. Because how else can they do what they do without the money to do it? So with that being said, whether you are putting money in a Roth or a IRA, 401k, 457, 403b, you might want to look at what's going to be the situation when you're pulling money out, not just accumulating it. Remember, it's not what you make, it's what you keep. And we want to talk about the difference between accumulation and distribution on next week's show. In this last segment, though, we do want to talk about when do you take your Social Security? At 62 or 65?
Good question. I've had a lot of people ask that.
We're asked that all the time.
When do you take it?
When do you take it at 62 or 65? Well, there's a couple things you must first understand about Social Security in order to answer this question. Now, around your birthday, the month before your birthday every year, you're sent a marketing brochure from the Social Security Administration.
Also known as a statement.
Also known as a Social Security statement, yes. And in that brochure, they tell you what your retirement age is to start with, which is 62 for most people, and what your full retirement age is. Now, it depends on the year you're born, whether you're born in the 30s, you know, 40s or whatever. If you're born, for example, well, I won't get into the scale, but basically what happens is, here's the question that I get by so many people. When do I take my Social Security? When I look at that marketing brochure, that Social Security statement that I get every year, it says that I should take it at 65, 66, 67, depending on how old you are now, or your full retirement age. Now, the reason I call this a marketing brochure is because when you look at 62 and 65, there's a big difference in the number.
Yeah, it's significant.
Okay. And so what they're in the government is encouraging us basically to do with this marketing brochure that we get every year is that we should defer taking Social Security till...
I'll take the bigger number, till full retirement.
At full retirement age, or 65. Now, what happens if you are still working and you take your Social Security at 62? Let's run through some scenarios, because how do you answer that question? Mr. Investment Advisor, how should I take my Social Security? Should I take it at 62 or should I take it at 65? Well, the first question that must be asked of you is, when do you plan on retiring?
Well, 62 we'll start with.
Okay, so if you want to retire at 62, I would encourage you to take your retirement at 62 and forego the higher amount at 65. Because the break even is about 72. What do I mean when I say break even, Luke?
That's when once you're older than 72, then it would make sense. It would have made sense to hold off because you'll end up with more money. If you up until that point, you end up with a higher total taking the money earlier.
So in other words, what Luke is trying to say and confusing you is that there is a crossover at 62 at 72 of whether you took it at 62 or 65. So imagine two lines, 62 and 65, they cross over at about 72. So at 72 is the break-even point. That's what I call it.
It's a wash.
It's a wash. 72. Okay. So if you're not planning on retiring, until 65, then you probably don't want to take your Social Security until 65. Why is that, you ask?
Well, that's a good question.
Why is that?
Why is that?
Well, that's because you're penalized. In fact, at age 62 to the end of the year prior to full retirement age, you get a $1 benefit reduction for every $2 that you earn over $14,160. So in other words, let's say that you're 62, you decide to take your Social Security, and you keep working. Well, if you make more than $14,000, then it might hurt you because you're going to get penalized. You're going to get a dollar taken away of Social Security for every $2 you earn over $14,160.
That's kind of harsh.
It is harsh. Okay. It's also harsh that you're taxed on Social Security.
Yeah, considering it's
which is money. Absolutely unacceptable. And if any of you get the ear of any of your so-called representatives, which I haven't met a so-called representative that's been representing me in all the years that I've been paying taxes. I've heard a lot of hot air and promises, but all I've seen is nothing but a higher tax. Was I saying that out loud?
Yeah,
Luke?
You're going back on the
I'm
political
sorry.
Rant. Let's
I
go
apologize.
Back to the financial show.
I thought I was saying that to myself, but I was saying it out
your
loud.
Your mic's on.
Okay, my mic's on. So you would not want to take your Social Security at 62 if you earn more than $15,000 a year, let's say, and you plan on keeping working or continuing to work. In the year you reach full retirement age, it's $1 reduction for every $3 that you earn.
So even if you keep working, you're going to lose money.
If it's over $37,680.
Okay, so
that year they
so
get
the number goes
higher.
Up yeah. and the reduction is lessened.
So then, starting with the month you reach full retirement age, there is no penalty. So here's the question. Should I take my Social Security at age 62 or 65? Well, in order to answer that question, we must ask you another question, which is, when do you plan on retiring? You said earlier.
62 earlier.
All right, so let's say Luke was going to retire at 62. Do you plan on continuing to work at 62 or no, or later? You said no, you're going to retire.
Correct.
Well, then why would you wait to take Social Security?
Unless you didn't need it, maybe. Say I had a pension or I had plenty of money coming in, and you know, the bigger number looks better.
Okay.
So you look at, so maybe it makes, does it make sense for me to hold off? Because I don't need the money necessarily.
Okay.
So
my answer would still be 62.
Okay.
Okay, why? Well, that's just a personal preference for me personally. I want every penny I can get when I can get it, because I don't know how long it's going to be there.
Bird in the hand.
Bird in the hand, exactly. So, in my opinion, I'm going to take it. If I retire at 62, I'm taking it at 62. Now, let's say that you weren't going to retire till 65. Would it make sense to take it at 62?
Depends on how much you make, I guess.
If you make more than $15,000 a year, you probably don't want to take it at 62.
No, that's a pretty big hit to take.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, it's interesting. We do a lot of retirement planning. That's one of our fortes. That's one that we really excel in, that area, income for life models, guaranteed income streams, as well as helping people manage their money and manage their risks. And what we find is the majority of people that come into the office and do not think that they can retire generally can. It's just no one's crunched the numbers for them and laid out all the timelines and when incomes are going to turn on and off and all that kind of stuff and figured it out for them.
Set everything up.
Yeah. It's the group that comes in and absolutely is confident that they can retire that rarely can.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's interesting, but you know, it's a very small percentage of people that come in, but some people come into the office, Luke, and they think I'm a miracle worker or something.
We've seen quite a few people walk out just with this burden lifted off their shoulders. Super relaxed. All of a sudden, they know they can retire. They know, you know, they don't have to eat rice and beans
they're
in their retirement.
Yeah, and their income is guaranteed. It's predictable. And that's another whole other show, Income for Life Models. But that's a show they can go to iTunes and listen to. If you haven't heard, you can go to iTunes, search, type in Financial Abundance, and you can get all of our shows download into your iPod, which is a great way to listen to It's Your Money when you're traveling, for sure.
Free of charge.
Free of charge. And we're also promoting something. We might as well stay on the promotion mode. For those of you that haven't heard, my CD that I did with Mark Mattson, he's a a entrepreneur out of Cincinnati, and he manages about $2.2 billion. Mark and I worked together to put together a CD called Seven Deadly Investor Traps That Destroy Your Wealth and the Three Power Strategies to Fix Your Portfolio Fast. If you haven't heard this CD, I strongly encourage you to email us through financialabundanceinc.com. That's financialabundanceinc.com. Or call the office, 866-867-5745, and request this CD, and we'll get it out to you. Folks, I'm telling you, it could mean the difference between 50% more net spendable income at retirement and not having that much. The seven deadly investor traps that destroy your peace of mind. You've heard this CD, right, Luke?
Yeah, multiple times.
And what's your impression?
I was blown away the first time I heard it. Just really well done, easy to understand, puts things into perspective that most of us haven't heard before. And then when I heard it the first time, I was like, wow, this all makes a lot of sense. And the more I hear it, you know, I pick up a nugget every time. It's in my truck right now. It really is an eye-opener.
It's not for those that are weak of heart. It's for those people who seriously want to know the truth about how the industry works. We pull back the curtain on it. And really what's cool is we have the 20 must-answer questions for lasting peace of mind as it relates to how to invest. The 20 must-answer questions that are answered in this CD that will help people have peace of mind. Because you don't need to know all this minutia that you see on the TV shows and the Bloombergs and all the different, I mean, it's crazy, folks. No wonder people eyeballs glaze over and roll in the back of their head when they try to watch some of this stuff. It's nothing but it's nothing but investainment, we call it. It's nothing short of consistent market timing. That's all we see in all these shows, is people encouraging investors to market time. And the reason for that is $100 billion a year is made by the financial institutions every year, according to Professor French out of Dartmouth, who put out a white paper a few years ago talking about the $100 billion question. But anyway, seven deadly investor traps. For those of you who'd like to take advantage of it, contact us, and we'll make you aware of or get you a copy of that. But Social Security, should I take it at 62 or 65?
Yes. Well,
yes, exactly. Yes. Depending on your situation. But, you know, that kind of gets into retirement planning. And by the way, with the minute or two that we have left, folks, you know, the eve of retirement is not when you start doing retirement planning. Okay? I mean, you know, it's amazing to me, the people that come into my office that are ready to retire in 6 months, 2 months, 3 months, and say, okay, let's do some retirement planning. We can do it. We can
Maybe.
Certainly do it.
Depends on what they have set up,
though. Well, that's true, too. But I'll tell you that if people can get to us 5 years before they retire, that's optimum. So if you're 5 years or more away from retirement, if you're 10 years away from retirement, folks, give us a call, because now's the time to make some moves, get some things set up so that you're going to have the least intrusive government as it relates to your accounts down the road. Did you know, Luke, there are a way to set up tax-free income streams? I bet a lot of people are not aware of that.
Yeah, we've talked about that, and when I first heard it, I would have called you a liar.
Right.
Had you not been my boss at the time.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing what you can do if you know the right things. And you don't need to know a lot, but just a few right things.
And if you have a coach teaching the few right things, you certainly don't need to know everything. So, as we're recapping today's show, we had a market update on here. We talked about qualified plans. That depends on your view of what is going to happen with taxes moving forward as to which kind you invest in. And we talked about, do you take your Social Security at 62 or 65? Well, it depends on how much longer you plan on working. Folks, you do not want to miss next week's show. Next week's show, we're going to be diving into the concept of equity management and designing your own bank. You've been listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach, with Luke Miller on our new time, part of Coach's Corner, It's Your Money. Look forward to hearing and talking to you next week. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.